Hold it.
TY.
All right. Good. Okay. Marks. Good. All right. Good morning, everyone. It is now 9:30. This is the Wednesday, May 6, 2020 morning session of the Portland City Council. Carla's here. Carla, could you please call the roll?
Hardesty?
Here.
Udaly.
I know she's here. Commissioner Udaly, are you on mute?
Sorry, I lost the screen. Yes, here.
Thanks.
Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by phone, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and promote social distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to do the city's business. Karen, good morning. Could you please read the usual statement?
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at any time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of the electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
Very good. Thank you. First up, Carla's communications. Could you please call the first individual? 337.
Yes. Request of Tyler Wilkins to address council regarding participatory budgeting Oregon. He will not be speaking.
Very good. Next individual is under item 338, please.
Request of Adam Phoebus to address council regarding commercial trash pickup times.
Hi, good morning, Mayor and council members. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Well, thank you all for your help to keep us safe during this pandemic, and thank you for your attention this morning. I'm here to talk with you about another public health hazard that I believe is costing taxpayers and property owners dearly in neighborhoods such as the Pearl District where I live. And the hazard that I'm referring to is the nighttime commercial trash pickup that has somehow persisted here for many years despite the complaints of so many residents who have been subjected to the deleterious effects of sleepless nights. To make matters worse, there are multiple trash collection companies that pick up on different schedules in the exact same area, causing more sporadic noise and excessive damage to the roads. And this probably sounds like hyperbole, so for context, you should know that my fiance and I live in an upper floor unit in a newer concrete and steel high rise. And we're woken up by slamming dumpsters 2 to 3 times per night, 4 days per week, every week. And that's 4 very stressful and sleepless nights every week without fail. And to top it off, our bodies have adjusted to this new norm. So we now wake up in the middle of the night filled with adrenaline on the 3 nights off as well. There's no respite, and we simply cannot afford the continued loss in job performance and health due to sleeplessness. And I've spoken with our building manager, as well as several residents of other buildings, including HOA board members of nearby luxury condos, and the suffering seems to be widespread. There's large multifamily buildings on nearly every block around us, and with a population of about 6,000 in an area that's less than a half a square mile, this is most certainly torturing hundreds, if not thousands, of the residents in this neighborhood alone. To continue to allow such a hazardous trash pickup schedule in a predominantly residential neighborhood seems like a flagrant disregard for the health and welfare of the citizens. For a quick refresh on the detrimental effects of poor sleep, the first page of your Google search will offer research by medical leaders such as Harvard, Johns Hopkins, and the NIH. So with that said, I'll move on to the other costs that I see associated with this. I imagine the property taxes generated by the residential units in the Pearl make a nice share of the revenue for the city. Not only can nuisances like this lower demand for property, resulting in a loss of money for both homeowners in the city, but the occupants are contributing to help the city thrive. So it seems like they've earned the right to adequate rest. In addition, I've seen many studies showing the exponential road damage caused by multiple heavy garbage trucks traversing the same streets. This added damage means that the taxpayers are repairing the roads more often than necessary at great expense. And you're probably thinking a single provider system would create a monopoly, but other progressive cities such as LA use a zone system with one provider per district to mitigate the issue. And I've heard the trash companies argue that commercial trash pickup during residential hours would increase traffic, but in a predominantly residential neighborhood like the Pearl, there's very little street traffic, and it's a grid with many different routes for commuters, so it just seems like lazy reasoning. In closing, I ask that you continue to protect our health, our taxpayer dollars, and property values by restricting commercial trash pickup times in neighborhoods such as the Pearl to residential pickup times, since these neighborhoods have become predominantly residential. And I know there's two sides to every coin, but I would imagine that the valued members of our community would accept a minor inconvenience in exchange for better well-being. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate your testimony. And it reminds me of a story from my past as well. There was a short period of time where I lived in Boston, and I lived in a lower unit on the backside of the building. And back then, of course, everybody just had the trash cans. And every morning, without fail, at about 4:15 a.m., the guys would come down and pick up the trash cans. And it was like a sport for them, seeing who could throw the trash can down onto the ground the hardest, just because they could. And it, so I can certainly relate to what you are saying. And I don't at my fingertips have the information on how the commercial trash collection is deployed in the Pearl District, but I know the people who do, and I'll certainly follow up with them and find out what they know about it. But I appreciate that street level feedback from you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty had a question too. I'm sorry, Adam, if you're still there.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just going to ask Adam if he would make his testimony available to the city council so that we can follow up on that information.
I'd be happy to. What's the best means to do so?
Carla, what's the best email for him to send it to?
He can send that to the CC testimony.
Okay, so
Oregon.gov.
Yeah, CC testimony at PortlandOregon.gov, Adam. CC testimony at PortlandOregon.gov.
You got it. Thank you all.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate your participation today.
Take care.
All right, Carla, next individual, please, 339.
Request of Lightning Super Karma to address council regarding Lightning Super Karma communication. We have no way of contacting Lightning.
Okay, and I'll just make sure. Lightning, are you on today? All right, sounds like he's not here. Next individual is 340.
Request of Joel Seam to address council regarding rude 911 operator.
Mr. Seam, are you on?
He also had no contact information.
Okay, and Carla, are we making it clear on the form that without the contact information, we can't connect people to the call?
These people signed up probably 2 months ago.
So oh, okay. Okay. Then it was, they were assuming that it would be in-person testimony.
Right, okay. And we've been trying to contact people 2 weeks in advance now.
Okay. And if any of those individuals happens to be listening, we will, of course, accept written testimony as well at that cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov email, and we do read it. So if you can't be on the call, we'll still get it. Last individual, 341.
Request of Eugene Heinzman to address council regarding property issues. He should be on the line.
Mr. Heinzman?
I should say he did register, so I'm sorry. Keelan, do you know if he's on?
Yes, he is on. Eugene, if you're able to unmute, I'm not able to unmute you. If you can push star six.
Keelan, is he on the phone or is he on Zoom?
It looks like he may be on Zoom, but someone's trying to call in. Let me see if that's...
Is that it?
There he is.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have a problem with Portland City lanes on both of my properties. And I had to go back east to take care of my mother and father. And this was in a 7-year period. And later, my relatives, they got homeless and they stored some different things that belonged to them on the property, and they camped there, and they had to do what they had to do, but they cost me a lot of nuisance complaints. And so anyway, in the meantime, I was taking care of my dad. It had complications with pneumonia, and my mother had Alzheimer's, and this was a big ordeal because it was like 3 years in my life. And my mother really didn't know me, but I always knew my mother to be a very loving person. And I wanted to take care of her because I've been a caregiver for 34 years. I had a lot of knowledge and understanding for her condition. And the other thing is, my twin sister later died in Philadelphia with an aneurysm. She fell to her death in her condo. And the other thing is, with all the torment of the city lanes, I fell in a city Portland street because they made holes in the street outside my house. And I had to go to the emergency room. Now, with the pandemic and everything else, This is humongous for me to think I was lose my homes. I worked all my life for. I have worked all my life, and to have this in jeopardy is really in the pandemic that's going on. I worry about my friends and relatives. I worry about you folks. I worry about everybody and myself. And if somebody can help me with this and forgive those liens or adjust the liens, I mean, they're $40,000-$60,000 liens. But I cost the city of Portland really nothing other than some nuisance complaints. And the other thing is, the city themselves have to put up with nuisance complaints by other people that live in Oregon or Portland that have to see homeless tents and whatnot. I understand this. But I look at the homeless with compassion. I know that they're stuck in a rut, and they got to be helped get out of it. I really have with this coronavirus thing, it's humongous to have these liens, and it's a torment to me. I'll let you respond to this if you like.
Thank you, Mr. Hensman, for your testimony, and you seem like a really decent person. Thank you for being here and listening to you talk about the care you gave to your mother and some of the personal trauma you experienced with the death of your sister. I appreciate you sharing your story. Commissioner Hardesty had a comment or question.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Hensman. I was trying to, it sounds like because of other life issues, there were liens placed against your property. I believe that there is a process where you could appeal those liens. Have you utilized any of the built-in processes that are in place.
I really didn't know there was a process and where to go with it, and that's why I'm consulting you today. In order to, I complied with a lot of issues that the city wanted me to do, and I tell them, come up and inspect, and they don't do it, but the liens just multiply and multiply and multiply.
So I hear your frustration. So what I would ask you to do is leave your contact information with the clerk, and I'll have someone from my office follow up with you, because I know in this 2 minutes, we can't achieve the whole story of what the specific issues are. Maybe there's something we can do to help you walk through processes to help you get to a good place.
Okay, I appreciate your wanting to help me. I really do. And, you know, I cry about this at night. I worry, and you know, because, well, it's something I worked for all my life, and I want to hand down a legacy to my grandkids and my, you know, my kids.
No, sir, I feel your pain, and I think we have a lot of Oregonians, a lot of people who are in the exact same situation that you're in. And so we'll just take it one step at a time and figure out if there's a path that we can help you get to. And thank you for taking care of your parents. That's what kids are supposed to do. But a lot of times we don't. Thank you for just being a good human. We'll see what we can do to help.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Hensman, for coming in. And I'm very hopeful that we can help you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank God for people like you.
And right back at you. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
That completes communications for today. Next up is the consent agenda. Carla, I understand item 3, 4, 5 has been pulled by the request of a resident. Have other items been pulled?
That's the only one we've had requests.
Please call the roll on the remainder of the consent agenda.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We'll go to item 3, 4, 7 on the regular agenda.
Proclaim May 5, 2020 to be Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women.
Colleagues, I want to acknowledge the critical issue and the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women, sometimes referred to in shorthand as MMIW, is happening all week here in Portland. The theme of this year's MMIW awareness campaign in Portland is strengthening the safety net. It will take the work of many and the awareness of even more to end the high numbers of Indigenous women who go missing or have been murdered around the country and beyond. This is an ongoing humanitarian crisis. American Indian and Alaska Native women are 2.5 times more likely to be raped or to be the victims of sexual assault compared to other racial groups. The city of Portland acknowledges the disproportionate rates of Native women who are victimized by domestic and sexual violence and trafficking. The Urban Indian Health Institute has published reports that identify policy changes that are needed, changes that the city is also strongly supporting, such as the Savannahs Act, the Not Invisible Act, and the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. This last year, we revised Portland Police Bureau policy language to direct officers to give full faith and credit to tribal court orders. Ensuring our police officers are enforcing tribal court protective orders is a critical step to improving the safety of Native women. Portland Police Bureau has started to work to build relationships with law enforcement. These relationships have resulted in partnering to locate missing loved ones who've been reported missing right here in Portland. Each year since 2018, the city's tribal relations director, Laura John, has worked with advocates from the Portland Native community to raise awareness of MMIW. I want to thank the community members that assisted in planning this year's awareness events online. I know that this was not easy to reorganize the plan for a community gathering to virtual speaker events online. We appreciate all the time and work that you put into this to ensure that we're continuing to raise awareness even while we're all staying home. I want to recognize the following organizations for their partnership on the city's MMIW Awareness Day events: the Portland State University Institute for Tribal Government, Native Wellness Institute, the Northwest Portland Area Indian Health Board, the Multnomah County Future Generations Collaborative, the Native American Youth and Family Center, and the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. I urge all Portlanders to join in solidarity with the national and local efforts to end the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. The conversations, learning, and showing of solidarity are just the beginning of the work that needs to be done. I'm committed to continuing to find ways that the city can support the changes needed to end the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. We acknowledge the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, trans, two-spirit, and non-binary in Indian country. I urge all Portlanders to join in solidarity with the national and local efforts to end the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And with that, I'd like to turn this over to our tribal liaison, Laura John. Then I'll ask for council comments, and then we'll read the proclamation. Director John, good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, City Commissioners. Thank you for this time. I know that you are not having too many presentations, so I really appreciate the time to be able to come on remotely and speak to council and to those that are watching council. As you know, there is a crisis that is impacting Indian country. That crisis is the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Over the last 3 years that we've been doing this work at the city, I've heard numerous stories, whether they are individual cases, national level data, and other anecdotal information, but we're still lacking in being able to have good data points to be able to share. This crisis needs a safety net. That is what has come out of all of the work that we have done to date. Of the estimated 1.5 million Native women who have experienced violence in this country, I want to bring another point forward, that 97% of that violence was committed by a non-Native perpetrator. This is a crisis. This is creating trauma. This creates extensive trauma for the person's lifetime, and also contributes to the already historic trauma that exists for so many Native people. This is a crisis that the City of Portland can play an impactful role in addressing. And I'm very proud to say that we have taken that on. And each year that we do these awareness events, we are leveling up and doing more. Last week, I received a call from the Washington State Police MMIW Tribal Liaison. This is a position that was put into place after their state report was completed and presented to the legislature. As you know, Oregon is currently in process of creating a similar report. So this particular position with the Washington State Police, the woman who serves in that role called me, and she said that she would like to work with the City of Portland. She indicated that there are numerous cases where young Native girls that live on reservations that are near the I-5 corridor in Washington are being abducted and taken across state lines. And the first place, it sounds like that they come, if they're coming south, is to Portland. That means that we can be a stopping place. If we have the right system, if we have the right education, and we make sure that everyone is aware of this and what to look for, it means that we can make a difference. And hopefully we can help to bring those young women home. The theme this year that came from working with a number of about 20 community advocates from the Native community is strengthening the safety net. So we would like to see Portland help strengthen that safety net. And I'm proud to share that that's happening. This year, we had a photo campaign, and thank you, Commissioner Fritz and Mayor, for sending your photo. And hopefully I'll get a photo from Commissioner Hardesty and you daily soon. for our photo campaign to show support. We're also focusing this year on traffic advocacy. What I have been told from community advocates is that during COVID, the sex workers are still out working. They don't have access to the resources that others do that aren't in that line of work. And that advocates are witnessing a large number of Native women that they see are quote unquote getting off of work early in the morning on 82nd, 122nd, downtown. And so we worked with PBOT this year. Thank you, Commissioner Hugh Daly, for providing the support for this, to put up PBOT variable signs on those streets with a sequence of messaging, which included a number to call for help, the Strong Hearts hotline, which is a Native women violence, anti-violence hotline, and also to educate people that this is MMIW awareness and that yesterday was the National Day of Awareness. We've also put together a series of online panel presentations. I just want to say the group that I worked with, we're so resilient and the kind of resilience that I know exists and I see every day in Native people in an Indian country. COVID hit and we were stuck at home. And when we heard that we couldn't have our usual community event and we had planned a walk across the Hawthorne Bridge, we couldn't do that. This group of amazing advocates jumped in and shifted and we did everything online. Which has been really amazing. We've had three events so far. There is a list of the events on the Tribal Relations-City of Portland Facebook page, as well as the mayor's blog. And I now have a tab up and for the Office of Government Relations website with the information and links to these online presentations. We heard on Monday from a group of nationally and internationally renowned MMIW advocates. We had Joan Jack, who was one of the motorcycle riders that came through Portland last year. They did the a complete circle around Canada and the United States and came through Portland. She spoke about her experience. We had Rosalie Fish, who is a collegiate athlete, runner from Washington, amazing young woman. I'm so excited to see what she does in the future, who uses her platform when she runs track to raise awareness of MMIW and does advocacy work when she's not doing athletics. We had Jean Tagaban from the Native Wellness Institute, who also works with the Alaska Native Men our anti-violence group up in Alaska, who talked about the importance of men playing a role in stopping this this epidemic, and that it's up to them to also come forward and be part of that safety net. We also heard from Catherine Paul from Black Belt Eagle Scout, a musician that's here in Portland who is Suquamish. She shared a song that relates to this issue. So I really encourage everyone that is tuning in today and to council and to council staff to please take some time and watch these presentations. We have another one coming up this evening. We'll be on sex trafficking. We have Jerry Muma, who is a national advocate for anti-trafficking in Indian country, who does trainings, provides curriculum, and has testified at state and congressional hearings about this issue. We have Marty Ray Ramsey, who is on the ground, in the trenches, advocate working with Native women who are being trafficked to help them to get out of that awful culture and provide them safety. We also have Brady Graben-Samco from Call to Safety. Call to Safety has been a big partner with us this year. We're really appreciative of their support. And Rena Williams from Another Level. They'll be speaking tonight about anti-trafficking in Indian country. And then I really do encourage folks to listen in on May 7th at noon to 1:30. We will be having a strengthening law enforcement to address MMIW. This is with the Oregon Department of Justice, the tribal liaison for the Oregon U.S. Attorney, and the tribal Amber Alert System. As many people may not know, tribes did not have access to use the Amber Alert System until just recently. Was a congressional change to allow for that access. And so that's that part of strengthening policy and strengthening the system. And then it, for those of you that enjoy yoga, we wanted to have this as a resilient event, and we know how hard this work is, and it's a very heavy subject. We've invited an amazing woman that I admire, Acacia Redout from the Umatilla tribe. She is she is a master in yoga, and will be doing native yoga for us and talking about how to do self-care when you're out there doing this hard work. So I want to, I appreciate that you gave thanks to the organizations that have been helping bring this together. It's just been really a tremendous boost to work with this group. I do want to give a special thank you to Michaela Madrid Stroop. She is just finishing up her master's degree in public administration at Portland State University. She also works in the Institute for Tribal Government. She has volunteered a tremendous amount of time this year and last year, but she's really helped elevate and make sure that we're doing the online Zoom similar to this platform for these presentations. And I don't think that it would have been as good without her assistance. So I want to give her a special acknowledgement today. So in closing, I want to say that this proclamation is not just merely words on a paper, and it's not about just one day in a year. This is an invitation. This is an invitation for the city of Portland as a local government to get involved and do what we can to strengthen the safety net, and for advocates out there, native or non-native, and also an invitation for those that need to be educated and understand what this issue is about. There's lots of resources out there. Please visit the Tribal Relations City of Portland Facebook page. We put a lot of resources up there and information to learn more about this issue. And again, Mayor and City Commissioners, thank you so much for your support. We are shining in regards to raising awareness and making changes. We are shining as a local government in this country. So thank you for your commitment and for your support.
Thank you, Director John. And before I turn this over to Commissioner Hardesty and Commissioner Fritz, in that order, if people were listening and they're inspired by some of the events that you mentioned, where can people go to get follow-up details?
Sure. So on your blog is information about the different, the links to the different presentations this week. They can also go to the Office of Government Relations website at the City of Portland and go to the Tribal Relations tab. There will be information there. I highly recommend looking at the Urban Indian Health Institute's report on 71 cities. Thank you, UIHI, for doing that report. It helped us strengthen our system last year, so we appreciate you giving us information on how we can do better. I will be putting additional links to primers that can give background on this issue on the Tribal Relations Office of Government Relations website this week.
Thank you. Thanks, Director John. And as always, we are very, very fortunate to have you in the position you're in. Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Laura John. Oh my gosh, I just want to reinforce what the mayor just said, Laura John. We are so fortunate and grateful to have you in the position that you're in to both help connect various communities and also just to be a strong model of a Native woman who is really clear about her role in this community. So I am very grateful for your strong leadership. This is a very just devastating issue that we talk about. This is my second year that I've had the great fortune to be a part of this City Council proclamation. And I have to say that as we experience COVID-19 together, I'm also devastated by the impact on Native communities as it relates to COVID infection and outcomes? Because your community and mine share those same outcomes, and we have to do better this time. So I look forward to continuing that conversation on another day. But for today, I just want to say that the rates at which Native women and girls experience violence is really staggering. But it's not just the numbers. We are talking humans, people in our community. I want to acknowledge also that this crisis is very underreported, like most violence against girls and women in our community. But for too long, it's just really been ignored. It's just been invisible to too many communities. More than 4 in 5 American Indian and Alaskan Native women and men have experienced violence in their lifetime. To those affected by this crisis, I say to you, you are not alone. There are resources and people eager to support you and your recovery. I'm appreciative of the many community partners whose efforts have gone into bringing this long overlooked issue to the public's eye, and want to especially thank Laura John, Portland's Tribal Relations Director, for her work in putting this week of awareness events together. I encourage all Portlanders to attend a virtual event hosted by our Tribal Relations Program and find ways to act in solidarity with our Native communities. I want to end on the Native and African American community share a culture of gathering. And so it is excruciating for me to not be able to hug people, to not be in community. And I'm pretty sure that many of your community members, Laura John, are feeling the exact same way. And so being able to come together, even virtually, is really important at this time so people do not feel that they're isolated. So thank you for your work every single day. And let's connect about how we can partner in making sure that we are elevating the issues around COVID-19 and how they're impacting Native communities. We have to do better because we're not there yet. So thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Laura John, for, hang on a second, there's a helicopter going past my window. Let me close it. Thank you for all of the work that you have done and for encouraging and asking the mayor to bring this proclamation, even while we're addressing so many challenging issues. It's important to continue to address this. And I appreciate that through your leadership, this is not just a proclamation. This is part of a program. This is part of a system of communicating and of collaborating with tribal governments. I appreciated all of the people you mentioned who are part of this work and that you have been coordinating with so many different tribes, and that we've done it for several years now, and that, as I say, it's not only a proclamation, it's part of the city's commitment to the tribes to repair past wrongs and to do better in the future, including for the many women who are so devastated by this. One of the things that you said that struck me the most was of over 1 million people who are affected by this tragedy, the perpetrators, 97% are non-Native people. And that is shameful, and I'm very sorry that that is continuing to happen. And I also appreciated your spirit of hope that we can interrupt the flow, that we can be the stopping place, not just the stopping to move on, but just stop, and you can be safe here. And that, so we know over the past several weeks, we've also funded programs that help women people experiencing human trafficking. So again, we put our money where our mouth is, and we will continue to do so. And I appreciate that you brought this today. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Laura John. This is always a hard day, but I know it's important that we continue to highlight the missing and murdered Indigenous women's movement. Too many people are unaware of the epidemic of violence against Native women and that it's taking place right here in Portland. Native women from other states are being trafficked along the I-5 corridor, sexually assaulted and murdered in our region. The Oregon State Police Missing Persons Database lists 11 Native women who are currently missing, including two women from Multnomah County. And there's no doubt that number represents a significant undercount. Distrust of law enforcement and the history of tribes being unable to prosecute non-Natives for their crimes has aggravated this issue. Native women have lost faith in the system's ability to protect them, which is why it's so critical we continue to raise awareness through the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women movement. Native women need to know that our whole country sees the gravity of this issue, that our government is working to better protect them, and that this violence cannot and will not continue. The federal government has taken some steps to address this crisis. The Umatilla tribe now has the jurisdiction under federal law to prosecute non-Natives for some of these crimes. But our government needs to do more. Savannah's Act has been stalled in Congress for far too long. This act will reform law enforcement and justice protocols to combat violence against Native women. I urge every Portlander and every Oregonian to contact your congressperson to encourage immediate action on Savannah's Act. Thank you to the community advocates for your commitment to raising awareness about missing and murdered Indigenous women, and to our Tribal Relations Director, Laura John, for your tireless work advocating for Native communities in City Hall. I will get you that photo. As usual, I don't own any red clothing, but I did round up a scarf with a red stripe on it, so I will take that picture today. This issue shows how important it is to have Native representation in local government. And thank you to everyone for tuning in today and wearing red to show your support. Together we can do better to protect Native women in Portland, in Oregon, and across our whole country. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, now it is my privilege to be able to read a proclamation on behalf of the City of Portland. Whereas the City of Portland joins a growing chorus of local, state, tribal, and national governments supporting the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And whereas the lasting effects of colonization and a history of oppressive policies directly correlate to the rise of violence against Indigenous women and girls in the United States, Canada, Mexico, Central America, and all U.S. territories. And whereas the disappearances and murders of Indigenous women and girls is directly connected to domestic and other forms of violence, sexual assault, trafficking, and a history of childhood, intergenerational, and historic trauma. And whereas these acts of violence and corresponding oversight and neglect of government law enforcement is a continued form of genocide and is a direct threat to tribal sovereignty, thus compromising Indian countries' self-determination and self-governance. And whereas the City of Portland recognizes that the issues of missing and murdered Indigenous women are not isolated to reservations or rural communities, but impact urban areas like the Portland metropolitan region. And whereas the City of Portland urges Portlanders to wear red every fifth day of the month to show solidarity, support, and to continue efforts to raise awareness about the needs to address the systematic obstacles that contribute to the occurrence of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And whereas the City of Portland calls upon its congressional delegation to support pending legislation that will address the lack of adequate federal responses to crimes against American Indian and Alaska Native people, such as the Survive Act and the Not Invisible Act of 2019. And now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim May 5th, 2020, to be Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you all. Thank you, Director John.
Thank you.
Carla, the next item on the regular agenda is item 348.
Authorize a competitive solicitation and contract with the lowest responsible bidder and provide payment for construction of the Goose Hollow Sewer Rehabilitation Project number E10683 for an estimated cost of $5,949,000.
Colleagues, Environmental Services has a project in the Goose Hollow and Southwest Hills neighborhoods. The work is going to include repairing and replacing over 2 miles of sewer pipes. Many of the existing pipes are up to 100 years old and are deteriorating. This project will protect the public and the environment by reducing the possibility of sewage releases to homes, businesses, and streets. Here today with a brief presentation are Joe Dvorak, engineering manager, and Young Zhang, project manager, both are with the Environmental Services Bureau. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Can you guys see me and hear me?
We can hear you. There you are. I see you, Joe.
All right. Thank you, Mayor and members of Council. Good morning. For the record, my name is Joe Dvorak. The Goose Hollow Sewer Project is one of many in our large-scale sewer rehabilitation program. This program addresses the highest risk sewers in the city of Portland. And over the years, we've replaced or rehabilitated over 55 miles of sewers. Before I turn this over to Young, I just want to take this opportunity to thank him and the project team for completing this design. Young has a few more details and slides he'll share here shortly, and then we'll also take any questions you may have at the end. All right, Young, it's all yours.
Before we do that, colleagues, three of you have your hands up. I'm assuming that's from the prior item, just to be clear. Commissioner Udeh, okay, good. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, Joe. Thanks.
No worries. Young, are you ready?
Yes, Joe. So I share my screen now. Give me a second.
There it is, Young. Thank you.
Yep. So thank you, Joe, and good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. So I'm Yang Zhang with BES. I'm the project manager for Goose Hollow Sewer Rehabilitation Project. As Joe mentioned, the Goose Hollow Sewer Rehabilitation Project is the one of the projects in BES large-scale sewer rehab program. So this program aims to fix the aging and deteriorated sewer pipes in the city. This project focuses on the Goose Hollow neighborhood and Southwest neighborhood and showing on this map. So the scope of the project includes rehabilitation and replacement of 10,100 feet of 6 to 24 inch sewer mains. Most of those sewer mains were installed between 1880s and 1940s. This project also includes installation of 1,400 feet of sanitary sewer extension and repair 2,000 feet of sanitary sewer lateral. The BES project team has performed extensive public outreach and engaged with project stakeholders and local residents since the project was initiated in 2018. So our public outreach includes the project flyers mailed to over 8,400 property owners, renters, business, public and private agencies. Email updates with over 200 interested individuals and social media poster on Nextdoor. We periodically update our project website about the latest project progress and status. Our project public involvement team, they made plantations at Southwest Hills Residential League and the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. Our PI team started and will continue direct outreach to business on West Burnside and near Providence Park Stadium that in the project. The PI team also have focused outreach to property owners for work in their private property, and also to the residents and the occupants near the network locations. To date, we haven't received any oppositions for this project. So in this project, we use four construction methods: open cut excavation, cured in place pipelining called CIPP, pipe bursting, and spur repair. The pipe to be replaced by open cut excavation is about 50% of the project, and pipe to be rehabbed by CIPP is about 40% of the project. And also in this project, the BES collaborates with PBOT and the Portland Water Bureau to restore about 850 feet of street on Southwest Montgomery Drive. That includes sewer main replacements, water main replacements, full street pavement restoration, and installing of the new ADA ramps. Construction estimate is about $5,949,000. Confidence level of the estimate is high. Based on the current project schedule, it is anticipated the project to be advertised in June this year. Then construction will start in November this year and last about 14 months. That's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you. Does that complete your presentation, both of you?
Yes, it does.
Right.
That's actually a really cool old photo there of the Goose Hollow neighborhood. That's awesome. Thank you for including that as well. Colleagues, any question on this item from our panel? Carla, do we have anybody signed up for public testimony?
No one registered, Mayor.
Very good. I'm not seeing any hands raised. This is the first reading of a non-emergency item. It moves to second reading. Item 349.
Thank you.
Authorize the Bureau of Environmental Services to acquire certain permanent and temporary property rights necessary for construction of the Montevilla North Sewer Repair Project through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority, project number E10385.
Very good. This is a second reading, colleagues. We've already heard a presentation and opportunity for public testimony. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item is item 350.
Authorize a letter of agreement between the city and public safety unions, including only the following: the Portland Police Association, Portland Police Association representing emergency communication dispatchers at the Bureau of Emergency Communications, Portland Police Commanding Officers Association, and Portland Firefighters Association Local 43 IAAF to establish a temporary agreement and to authorize employees to receive full pay for qualifying paid sick leave under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act.
Very good. And Carla, you skipped one part of that. I just want to make sure we get it. It's Local 43 IAAF to establish a temporary agreement regarding the Families First Coronavirus Response Act.
I had put those two together. Yep, got it.
Good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Today we have an ordinance before us that includes letters of agreement with our labor partners in PFFA, PPA, and PPCOA. These agreements recognize the critical nature of our emergency responders and the need for paid sick time if the employee is unable to work due to a need for leave because of COVID-19 and its impact on those who are closest to them. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act was passed by Congress this March, and it authorizes employers to exclude emergency responders from coverage. As a city, we recognize the need for these critical public safety professionals to have access to these benefits, and we worked with our labor partners in Portland Fire and Rescue, the Portland Police Bureau, and the Bureau of Emergency Communication to find an agreement that makes sense for their operations. I understand that there's an amendment to this ordinance that adds the PPA BOIC agreement as a listed exhibit. And that being the case, Kathy Bless, who is the director of the Bureau of Human Resources, and Heidi Brown, the deputy city attorney, are here to explain the amendment and answer any questions that you have. And there may be other amendments from the council as well. Good morning.
Good morning. And I don't believe that actually a formal amendment will be required. We are just really submitting the BOEC PPA agreement as part of the packet today.
So, all right, so no formal amendment is required. Heidi, is that correct?
That is correct, Mayor. Thank you.
Very good. Commissioner Hardesty?
I was on mute.
Everybody gets a couple of those a day.
That's true. I haven't had one of those in a while. Heidi, I'm sorry. There was an amendment that I shared with the mayor in regard to fire and rescue. And you just said that there was no need for, is it for that one or is it the BOAC one you were referring to?
It was for the BOAC one, Commissioner. We have the actual agreement between PPA BOAC and BOAC that we submitted in case council wanted to see the actual agreement. But when we first drafted the ordinance, we didn't have all the agreements completed. So instead, the ordinance just seeks authorization from council for BHR to enter into these letters of agreement. And excuse me, but good morning, Mayor and Commissioner and all council members. My apologies. Heidi Brown.
Good morning. Thank you for that. Mayor, I would like to offer an amendment, if I might. The amendment would read, in the first sentence of Section B, we would delete Portland Fire and Rescue. Then I would like to add this sentence after the first sentence of the same section. The Director of Human Resources is authorized to enter into a letter of agreement with the union representing Portland Fire and Rescue in a form substantially similar to Exhibit A. But it is further authorized to provide up to 103.38 hours of emergency paid sick leave pursuant to the FFCRA.
So Commissioner Hardesty, I will second that and we'll put it on the table. Why don't we hear the presentation on the main motion, and then if they could also speak to the amendment that Commissioner Hardesty has put on the table, then we can discuss it all as a package. And if there's public testimony, take public testimony on this package.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. This is Kathy Bless, Chief Human Resource Officer for the City of Portland. I'm also joined this morning by Heidi Brown, Chief Deputy City Attorney, to request approval of item 350. I would like to acknowledge and thank PFNR Chief Sarah Boone, PPB Chief Jamie Resch, and BOAC Director Bob Causey for their collaboration and support on this ordinance, as well as Heidi Brown, Lori Kraut, and our labor partners. I would also like to thank your staff, Mayor Wheeler, on the quick turnaround in getting this ordinance on the agenda today. On March 18th, 2020, Congress enacted the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, FFCRA. The act took effect on April 1st, 2020. Among other things, this leave provides emergency paid sick leave and expanded family medical leave for particular employees affected by the coronavirus pandemic. However, emergency responders may be excluded by the employer for benefits provided by the FFCRA. This certainly is not the case as we are presenting these LOAs in response to this leave. The city has worked with the Portland Firefighters Association, the Portland Police Association, and the Portland Police Commanding Officers Association to provide our represented firefighters, police, and emergency dispatchers with coverage under this new law. These agreements are similar to the agreements Council approved for the non-public safety unions on March 25th. These agreements will be retroactive to April 1st. This ordinance authorizes BHR to enter into letters of agreement with PFFA, PPA, and PPCOA for application of the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. This will provide the emergency paid leave to our city emergency responders for those who meet the eligibility requirements. Thank you for consideration of this ordinance. Both Heidi and I are available to answer any questions that you might have this morning. And I'll first start in providing a bit of information related to Commissioner Hardesty's amendment. So the intent, and Commissioner Hardesty, you can absolutely speak in any moment to correct me if I'm wrong. The intent is to ensure that those that work 24-hour schedules are provided the full 2 weeks of FFCRA leave. It does impact cost related to the additional benefit. It would come as additional accrued sick leave that would be a later liability to the city. The law provides for 80 hours of coverage. It did not distinguish between those 24-hour schedules that first responders have. We have allowed public safety as entities that would be, that we are considering as part of this program, which the law allowed us to exclude. And then we are also allowing their hourly wage, which is typically higher than the daily limits that the law allows as well. So those are kind of the parameters. Understand the intent of the amendment and the parity in which Commissioner Hardesty is trying to create.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions at this point? Commissioner Hardesty?
Thank you, Mayor. I think I would just like to speak to the amendment. Thank you, Kathy. I think you did an excellent job of articulating what my concern is. And of course, my concern is that we treat all first responders equally. We only have one first responder unit, however, that actually works a 24-hour shift. And if we say that employees are entitled to 2 weeks off if they have symptoms or family members have symptoms, we have to acknowledge that we have only one workforce that works a 24-hour shift. And it is my goal to make sure that we don't further exacerbate inequalities that are created because we create policy for a 40-hour shift when a 40-hour week when people work 24-hour shifts. So I would appreciate my colleagues' support. I think this is what equity looks like. And I don't see any other way to implement it that would ensure that we are protecting our first responders who are really on the first line of this COVID-19 pandemic. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Appreciate that very much. Any further questions of the panel? Carla, do we have public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have one person requested to speak. Gentlemen.
Handelman.
Good morning, members of council. This is Dan Handelman. I'm a member of Portland Cop Watch, and I thank you for providing the opportunity for public comment. Directly speaking to this agenda item, we have nothing against giving benefits to workers as provided under federal law. We understand this is providing sick leave, which was made optional by Congress for the city's emergency workers. On a conference call of CopWatch members, we had a discussion where we acknowledged that not all workers are eligible for this benefit. Furthermore, it must be recognized that many people have not been able to keep their jobs under the pandemic. But the only comment we really have on this particular item is it says there is no cost to the ordinance, but that's probably not accurate. More broadly, the agreement you're adopting with the Portland Police Association is the kind of side agreement we referred to in a letter we wrote with other community partners like Unite Oregon, which is part of a larger community campaign to include community concerns and contract talks. Today's special addendum is something being negotiated with that collective bargaining unit, but not specifically part of the contract. And we continue to urge that similar side issues raised in the community letter about the discipline matrix, the oversight system, and the potential body camera program be discussed in the current negotiations. We thank council for making this an open and transparent process, the negotiations this year, and for holding public listening sessions to gather priorities. We understand the city is facing an enormous budget shortfall. However, we are concerned that the news release announcing the last bargaining session, which was to be held in public, was posted on the day that session was scheduled, April 27. We know the decision was made days earlier. We recognize it's difficult to adjust to the challenges of the pandemic, but communication is key as things move forward. The news release indicates the session was canceled due to the stay-at-home order, but does not indicate whether that means it will be rescheduled. If the issue is how to hold a bargaining session that the public can observe, at which the parties can securely hold private conversations before heading back to the table, we're sure the technical aspects of that can be worked out, just as council has figured out how to allow the public to testify at these meetings. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Handelman. We appreciate it. Carla, is there additional testimony?
That's all who registered for this item.
All right, colleagues, this is a emergency ordinance. We'll vote on Commissioner Hardesty's amendment first. Any further discussion on Commissioner Hardesty's amendment?
Mayor, I do believe that we may want to discuss calling out suppression employees specific to the amendment. I'm going to let Heidi speak to that.
Very well.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. So within the Portland Firefighters Association, there are three different work schedules. One is the fire suppression schedule, which, as Commissioner Hardesty's amendment addresses, would allow them to take what is the equivalent of a two weeks of their regular scheduled work. They also have employees who are on 42-hour work weeks and then employees who are regularly scheduled on 40-hour work weeks. So I would just assume that what council would authorize HR to enter into would be an agreement that would reflect 2 weeks of leave of employees regularly scheduled leave under the contract. So it would be either the 51.69 per week for 2 weeks or 42 hours per week for 2 weeks or 40 hours. And if there's any questions about that, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Let me just say that, Heidi, you're absolutely correct. I am really focused on the suppression employees and those who are scheduled for 24-hour shifts. So, yes, I think Kathy and her team could work to make sure that we're not enhancing any hours that aren't already their regular scheduled hours. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Heidi, could you do me a favor? Because I'm not as well versed on this as other people. Could you state in a different way what you just stated in terms of the issue of suppression? Could you clarify that for me, please? Because I'm not tracking as closely as I should be.
Absolutely, Mayor. No, they have a lot of different schedules, so it's not real clear. Because of the 24 hours a week schedule and the way that it falls to land within 1 week, it ends up actually being 51.69 hours per week. And I know that sounds odd. It just means they work two full days and then their third day kind of gets cut up.
Okay.
About 48 hours plus then you have this 3.69 hours. And then that concludes that 1 week, and then it just keeps rotating through, and it ends up being this 51.69.
Got it. Okay, so this is basically accounting for that variability.
Exactly.
Okay, and is it your contention that Commissioner Hardesty's amendment clarifies that, or was it your intent to read this into the record so that it is clarified? What is it you are asking the council to do as a result of this information around suppression?
I think that Commissioner Hardesty's amendment addresses it because it authorizes BHR to enter into a letter of agreement with PFFA for up to 103.38 hours, which is the two times 51.69. So that authorizes, with it saying up to, that will allow BHR to provide for 51.69 per week for the fire suppression employees, as we just discussed. But it'll also allow us with BHR to give 42 hours for those per week for those employees on that schedule, and 40 hours per week, because there are some folks also on a 40-hour week schedule. Okay. So it will allow BHR, because you're authorizing up to, it'll allow them to account for those different possibilities. I think for transparency's sake, we just wanted to be sure that you were aware that there were three different schedules. And I understood Commissioner Hardesty's intent was to address those three different schedules in the way they are written in the contract.
All right, good. Thank you for that. The idiot's guide to the hours. I appreciate it, because frankly, I needed that primer. So thank you. I feel better informed now.
Thank you.
So are there any other questions for either Heidi or Kathy from the council on this subject? We'll take up the roll then on Commissioner Hardesty's amendment. Carla, please call the roll on Commissioner Hardesty's amendment.
Hardesty.
First, just let me say how much I appreciate the hard work that went into negotiating this agreement with the human resource staff and PFFA. I know there were many conversations to make this happen as quickly as it did. I'm thankful that we were able to do that. I want to be clear that this amendment is not an additional benefit, but it will allow us as a city to fulfill the intent of the Family First legislation, which was to allow 2 weeks or 14 days off to care for themselves or family related to COVID for our firefighters. The proposed amendment is simply adjustments to account for the full 14 days because of the 24-hour shifts that firefighters currently have. My amendment offers no more protection than what is allowed for you or I, although we have the luxury of being able to work from home. Today, we are focused on an agreement with our firefighters, and the city will help protect them in an event that they or a family member contracts COVID, which we know they are at high risk for contracting. Because of the extraordinary leadership in fire, we have not seen the kind of outbreaks that other fire departments have. I am very proud of the work that all city leaders, including those at the Fire Bureau, have shown in this effort. In the event, however, that a firefighter or their family is ill with COVID, it is my intent that they will be provided for the full 14 days to provide care. I hope you will support this small adjustment. I vote aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
So thanks to everybody who's crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I appreciate the amendment. Aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty, for bringing that forward. It seems eminently fair that we would do this. To the main motion, any further discussion? Carla, please call the roll on the main motion as amended.
Hardesty.
These are our first responders at the City of Portland. They deserve to be treated with the dignity that they've shown throughout this COVID crisis that we're in. I am proud to be able to make sure that they have the same protections that every other worker is entitled to in the United States. I vote aye.
Udaly.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you very much to all of the first responders for the work that you're doing and for working to keep our community as safe as possible. Aye.
Wheeler.
Thank you. This looks great. I'm happy to support it. The ordinance is adopted as amended. Next item is item 351, please, from the Bureau of Transportation.
Authorize a contract with the lowest responsible bidder for the downtown I-405 pedestrian safety and operational improvements project for an estimated $3,183,401.
Colleagues, this is a second reading. We've already heard testimony and had the opportunity for public input. Any further business on this item? Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty?
I must say that this item made my head hurt as I was trying to follow the improvements that would take place. But I have faith and confidence that we are going to make improvements that are going to make it safer for people to walk, bike, and explore in Northwest Portland. I vote aye.
Hugh Daly.
Well, I want to thank Gabe Graff for following up with council offices on the questions raised last week, and to all the PBOT staff for your work on this. I know it's a complicated fix, but we've got some real smart planners and engineers over at PBOT, and I also have faith in this project. I vote aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thanks everybody for your hard work on that. And if I have my schedule correct here, the last item on our agenda is going back to the pulled item from the consent agenda. That's item 345.
Authorize a one-year lease agreement with 524 Properties, LLC for laboratory space at 524 North Tillamook Street through May 31, 2021 at an estimated cost of $21,120 for cryptosporidium genotyping to support the Portland Water Bureau's bilateral compliance agreement with Oregon Health Authority.
And I believe we have Chris and Pauline here to describe this item. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mayor.
Could you identify yourself for the record, please?
My name is Chris Warner. I'm Director of Operation for Portland Water Bureau.
Thank you. Could you give us a brief overview of this item, and then we'll take the public testimony from the individual who pulled it?
Certainly. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. As a direct responsible charge for the Portland Water Bureau's drinking water compliance, I always want a plan A, B, and C to ensure that we meet continued compliance. When it comes to the bilateral compliance agreement for the long-term to enhance surface water treatment agreement with the Oregon Health Authority, which is our primacy agency, we have two aspects to cryptosporidium. One is analysis for determining whether there are positive OSIS, and the second part of that is genotyping those positive OSIS to determine the speciation, or basically the origin of where that crypto came from or originated. Since in the last 3 years, we have been unable to successfully genotype any of the positive OSIS. We have a backlog of well over 100 OSIS that need to be genotyped. Previously, we had the University of Texas providing the genotyping services, and the last successful genotyping was performed back in 2017. Remember, the bilateral compliance agreements requires genotyping, attempt to genotype all positive OSIS. Subsequent to that, as I mentioned, I like to plan A, B, and C. We had under contract Analytical Services Incorporated, a contract lab on the East Coast. They were capable of doing genotyping. So once the University of Texas had become no longer able to do genotyping because of personnel changes, we shifted our genotyping, our OSIS, to the lab at ASI on the East Coast. That lab had some contamination issues and have been unsuccessful in performing any genotyping of our positive OSIS. So we still have a bank of well over 100 positive OSIS waiting to be genotyped. Plan C. I had my folks look at Oregon Health and Sciences University to see if we could utilize their lab and genotyping capacity to perform those genotypes on our positive, on our OSIS. So we put together a small agreement with them under $5,000, and we were unable to complete any form of genotyping, and then COVID came along and they are no longer performing any outside contract lab type of events such as genotyping our crypto. At this point, I'm kind of out of the A, B's, and C's. So I had my folks look at alternative resources. And one of those was some office space adjacent to our complex at the interstate. So in effect, we will be doing our own genotyping. The Water Bureau has a world-renowned crypto specialist working for us. And they have the capacity and the equipment now to perform those and the genotyping analyses. We just need the space to do it. Because of the complexity of genotyping we're in, we need to have specific spaces for each of the steps of the genotyping sequences. We needed three office spaces or separate environments. Those were readily available near the interstate complex. In regards to costs for this, we will actually end up, if we are successful in doing genotyping at our own rented facilities, in saving money over the life of contracts. We'll not be using ASI for performing any of the crypto analysis or genotyping. So that's where we are with this. I think it was a very reasoned approach to ensuring continued compliance with the bilateral compliance agreement.
So, Chris, from a layman's perspective, if I could boil this down to two sentences. Number one, we're in an agreement with the Oregon Health Authority, which requires us to do this research. And number two, we are leasing a lab space that would enable us to conduct that research. Does that boil it down?
That's correct, sir, Mayor.
Okay, good. Colleagues, any further comments before we move to public testimony on this item? Carl, it's my understanding this was pulled by a resident and we have public testimony on this item.
That's correct, Mayor. Dee White has registered.
Very good. Ms. White, are you on board?
I am.
Very good. Good morning.
Hello, my name is Dee White, and I want to just give a little bit of background since we've been working on this LT2 initiative of Bill for over 15 years. The background, originally no organization submitted any kind of comments in support of this LT2 rule. Pages and pages of scathing comments were submitted only, including from the American Water Works Association and from all of the large unfiltered water groups of which Portland is a part. All of them submitted scathing comments from New York, San Francisco, Washington, Seattle, Tacoma, Boston. Portland was the only one who would not submit comments because they were busy helping craft this flawed rule in D.C. And naturally, Portland isn't going to say that they don't want this. Just as an example, New York City's comments among them were, New York concludes that the public health benefit from complying with the proposed rule is vastly overestimated, and at the same time, the costs are vastly underestimated. So I guess, given all that, the only comment that was in favor of this rule was submitted by a for-profit lab technician, and he was the only one that submitted a comment, and it just happened to come from a lab, a profiteering lab. I submitted some questions to y'all last night, and hopefully that y'all would have addressed, which were not addressed. So I'm going to go on and just say them again. How is this not a conflict of interest? Or in layman's terms, the fox guarding the hen house? You've got the Water Bureau examining genotyping to comply with this flawed rule so that they can build this filtration plant. It seems to me like it's just obvious that this is such a conflict of interest. And also, I mean, if you want to explain it in bureaucratic terms, if you control the process, you control the outcome. I think this is just so unethical. And what about there is a contract that was renewed with ASI that Mr. Warner was talking about. It was renewed in January of this year for another 5 years because there is $650,000 left on an existing contract with them, and they're just going to be using that to do the backup genotyping because the Texas lab could no longer do it. You say you have contamination issues. Is that not something that can be solved? I mean, that's insane that you would eliminate them and put in your own lab. And so what happens to all that money? I mean, how is double contracting? We see no connections or referrals or facts that explain this indefensible in-house lab testing scheme by the Portland Water Bureau.
All right. Thank you, Ms. White. You've made your point very clearly. Commissioner Fritz, I see you have your hand raised.
Thank you, Mayor. I thought that Mr. Warner explained very clearly why we have to do the testing ourselves. Chris, would you please state for the record, does the Oregon Health Authority have to agree to this this plan?
I'm sorry, Commissioner, what was the question again? Does the OHS require
are they all right with this plan to do our own testing?
Absolutely. They would like to see the genotyping analyses performed through the Water Research Foundation approved methods, and that's what we would be utilizing to perform those genotyping analyses.
Thank you so much.
Any further questions? I'll just reflect on Dee's testimony. She's getting at the larger issue of the question of whether or not we should be engaged in the cryptosporidium process at all, or whether the city should push back. And that is a larger question. The ordinance before us today is specific to the testing and the rental of the lab space to be able to do that.
The larger question is conflict of interest.
With that, Carla, please call the roll.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Udaly.
Commissioner Udaly, did you vote? I couldn't hear it.
Sorry. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Chris Warner, and also to Pauline Goebel from Facilities, who also took time out of her day today to attend the meeting. And thank you for finding this space so conveniently close to the existing facilities. This is important work, and it's required to be done, and I appreciate all of the good work that's being done. Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. And Carla, I believe that finishes our agenda for today. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.
Bye.